The past didn't go anywhere. A The Untamed fanfic. Written by Ferris Cat. Read by Black Glass. There are rumors. There are always rumors. The cultivation world is fueled by rumors. By stories passed from town to town, from tea house to tea house, muddled and embellished with each retelling. Don't take that road by night. The forest is haunted by the restless dead. Fierce corpses? The fiercest. Not just any fierce corpses. These ones were once cultivators. My cousin's neighbor's sister saw it with her own eyes. Walk further to do your washing. 5 women have drowned in that river this season. No, I heard it was 10, and all from the same village. Vanished without a sound. Washed up on the shore the next morning, without a mark on them. The fearsome Yiling patriarch has returned, and is raising a new army of the undead. Nobody can stop him this time. He's being protected by Han Guangjun himself. But these rumors are different. The tellers pitch their voices low, swear their audiences to secrecy, stop talking the moment a cultivator walks through the door. There's a woman traveling the countryside. She wears the white of mourning, and she always travels alone. No one knows what clan she came from. She never even shares her name. If you ask too many questions about her past, she'll leave and never come back. She's a healer, a powerful cultivator who can heal any ailment with her medicines and her needles. And she only goes to the poorest villages, only treats ordinary farmers and laborers, stays away from even the smallest cultivator clans. Still, word gets around. And eventually, and probably, the rumors make it to Lotus Pier, though it's a much bigger town than the healer ever visits, and to the ears of the Yunmengjiang clan leader, San Du Shengshou himself. Jiang Cheng doesn't listen to rumors anymore. The cultivation world is in turmoil. His idiot brother is back from the dead, and his 16-year-old nephew just became a clan leader. He doesn't have time for rumors. He certainly doesn't have time for the kind of rumors that make him think about all the secrets his brother took with him to his grave all those years ago. So many long-buried truths were resurrected along with Wei Wuxian. But Jiang Cheng is a busy man, an important man, and he doesn't have time to dwell on the past. Still, Jiang Cheng spent 16 years listening to rumors. 16 years chasing down every whisper of a breath of the words Yiling Patriarch. And those kinds of habits are hard to break. Those kinds of information networks are hard to break. Jiang Cheng doesn't listen to rumors anymore, but he still hears them, and he's starting to hear this one everywhere he goes. He hears it in the whispering in the tea shops that stops when he enters the room, and in the murmured conversations on the street that go abruptly silent in his presence. He hears it in the stories that aren't making their way around Lotus Pier this year. Tales of whole families wiped out by illness, of mothers carrying their sick children through the countryside, searching for miracle cures. He hears it in the fresh graves he doesn't see in the villages, and the orphans he doesn't see on the streets. He hears it in the dreams he only half remembers, in the phantom glimpses of red robes he keeps catching out of the corner of his eye. Eventually, it becomes harder to ignore the rumor than it is to listen. Unfortunately, a carefully nurtured reputation as the fearsome and dangerous San Du Shengshou becomes something of a liability when you're trying, for once, not to terrify and intimidate people into answering your questions. The solution comes to him 3 days later, in the form of a surprise diplomatic visit from the Gusu Lan clan. Jiang Cheng is unclear as to whether diplomatic visit is, in this case, code for "the new chief cultivator is keeping an eye on you," or "your nephew's friends wanted to see him." But either way, the laugh's on them. Jiang Cheng has no interest in doing anything the great Han Guangjun may consider a threat, and Jinling left for Koi Tower last night. But that one Long Clan disciple, who is just so fucking friendly and polite all the time, is with the delegation, and that gives Jiang Cheng an idea. What he needs, he realizes, is an agent. Someone to ask questions on his behalf. Someone non-threatening. Someone nice. And if that someone just happens to have been seen traveling with the Ghost General lately, that's even better. He refuses to consider why it's better. It just is. Lan Sijue is confused. It's not that he's unwilling to lend his assistance to the Jiang clan. It's not an unreasonable request, although clan leader Jiang phrases it more as a demand. And Lan Sijue knows there is a debt of family between them, even if Jiang Cheng does not. He can't help wondering, though, what's so significant about these particular rumors. This mysterious healer is an intriguing mystery, certainly, but hardly one worth so much time and attention from such an important man. Still, there's something in the way Jiang Cheng asked for his help that tells Lan Sijue that this is more important to the clan leader than he is letting on. San Du Shengshou always simmers with an undercurrent of anger, but his eyes flashed, and Zidian sparked quite alarmingly when Lan Sijue ventured to ask whether he meant the healer any harm. So Lan Sijue goes on a few solo night hunts. He finds the source of the resentful energy troubling travelers on a little-used road, subdues a troublesome water demon, uses inquiry to bring closure to some restless spirits. When he's offered a meal or a bed for the night and thanks, he always says yes. And he always finds a reason to talk to the village grandmothers. He compliments their cooking, admires the health of their grandchildren, talks of his own history as an orphan adopted into one of the great clans. And slowly, he learns the mystery healer's story. She is very proud, he is told, and does not gossip. Her bedside manner can be cold, and she is inclined to scold. But her hands are skilled, and she is unfailingly gentle with the smallest children. There is something familiar in the picture of her that's coming together in his head. Maybe it's just that she reminds him of Han Guangjun. Or maybe, he finds himself thinking late one night, it's the other way around. Wenqing has always known her past would catch up with her eventually, but she'd hoped to have more time. That had been her agreement with Nie Huaisang when he came to her in Koi Tower and released her from her imprisonment in exchange for her assistance in stitching Nie Mingjue's broken body back together. She had not asked how he'd found her or what his plans were. All she'd asked for was time. Time to find herself again, to walk alone and untroubled after 16 years in chains. But when she hears that a Lan clan disciple has been asking about her, she knows her time has run out, and resigns herself to an extremely awkward conversation with Lan Wangji. If she's lucky, he won't be accompanied by Wei Wuxian. She does not expect to be lucky. Very polite and humble, all her sources say of the unknown disciple. Such a lovely young man. She knows she can't outrun Han Guangjun. At the next town large enough to have an inn, she gets a room, and then a meal. She eats alone, and is unsurprised when she ventures back upstairs to find the door to her room ajar, light spilling into the hallway. She keeps her hands away from her sides as she enters, but holds her head high. She has never cowered before these men. She will not do so now. But the young man waiting in her room is unfamiliar to her, and can't be older than 18 or 19. Dressed as he is in the familiar pale robes of Gu Su Lan, he looks like he too could be in mourning, but his manner is relaxed, his face friendly. Wenqing doesn't recognize him, and his brow furrows in confusion when she steps into the light. It seems neither of them are who the other expected. His eyes dart away from hers and then back. They are not alone in the room. I never knew you to stand in the shadows, Han Guangjun, she says, voice firm. Will you not face me now that you've found me? There is a shift and a rustle of fabric, but it is not the stoic second Jade of Lan, who steps out of the shadows, but an entirely different familiar face. She'd recognize that stiff posture anywhere. The sharp lines of his face have grown harsh with age and anger. But he is still beautiful. Still the man she once thought she could love. Zidian sparks purple in Jiang Cheng's fist, and she instinctively reaches for a sword she lost long ago. A memory of another life. They both freeze. She feels trapped by his gaze, feet pinned to the floor. She had not been prepared for this. Their silent standoff is broken by a sharp gasp and the clatter of something heavy hitting the floor. They turn as one. The Lan disciple's eyes are wide, his hands shaking. He has dropped his sword.
Lan Zijue! What are you doing? Pick up your sword!
Jiang Cheng's words are harsh, but there's concern in his eyes. Whatever this reaction is, he had not expected it either. The boy is staring at Wenqing. He doesn't even acknowledge the reprimand.
I know you, he says, voice shaking. I know your voice. You used to argue with Master Wei. I remember he would laugh at you, and then you'd scold him and tell him he was a bad influence on me. And then you'd pick me up and take me with you to get food, or sit with Granny Wen, or...
His voice breaks off, and he flings himself into her arms. She staggers under the unexpected weight. This young man in her arms. The impossible hope his words have stirred in her chest.
Yuan.
Her voice cracks on the second syllable. It cannot be him. She cannot let herself believe it's him. The young man.
Lan Zijue. Lan Yuan.
Her Ao Yuan. Buries his face in her hair and bursts into tears. Wenqing doesn't know what to do. Her knees are suddenly weak, but she cannot let go. They stay that way for a long time, until Ao Yuan slowly pulls himself away and turns to stare at Jiang Cheng.
Did you know?
His voice is shaking.
Clan leader Jiang, did you know it was my aunt Wenqing? Is that why you asked for my help?
The shock in Jiang Cheng's eyes is answer enough.
What? But you... You're a Lan. Everyone knows you're a Lan. What are you playing at?
His voice is shaking with anger. Jiang Cheng was always so angry, she thinks, but never angrier than at himself. She squares her shoulders and faces him. But first, it was Wen Yuan, she says. A war orphan, raised in the burial mounds, under the protection of the Yiling Patriarch. Jiang Cheng takes a step backwards, falters, and then plants his feet again. For just a moment, his mask breaks, and she sees not the fearsome San Du Chengshou, but the broken Zhang Wanyin, unable to imagine a life without his golden core. Heng Guangjun came for me, after... Ao Yuan doesn't need to continue. Everyone in this room knows how that sentence ends. I had a fever. I didn't remember. Not until Master Wei came back. Until I was talking to Wenying, and he... Wenqing flinches at her brother's name. That's a reunion she's not yet ready to face. Might not ever be ready to face, although she knows it's inevitable now. She puts that thought aside and turns to Jiang Cheng. Why are you here, Jiang Wanyin? Surely you can see I am no threat. She holds her hands out. You can see I'm unarmed.
Haven't you killed enough of my family to last a lifetime?
This time he doesn't flinch at her words, doesn't falter. He reaches for his belt, but it's not his own Sandu that his hand finds, but another, darker sword she had not seen hanging at his waist. Before she can react, before she can see, Jiang Cheng is suddenly dropping to his knees in front of her. His movements are clumsy. This is not a man who has spent much of his life on his knees. He's holding a sword. Her sword. She'd recognize it anywhere. Jiang Cheng, San Du Shengshou, is on his knees before her, holding Wenqing's sword in front of him like an offering. She doesn't even remember when she lost it, abandoned in the mad scramble to protect the remains of her family at the end of the Sunshot campaign. Swords were never the most important part of her cultivation. This time, it's Wen Qing who falters, takes a shaky step back. She thinks she hears Aoyuan gasp, but it's a distant sound. Jiang Cheng's posture is perfect, shoulders back, head held high, but his hands are shaking. Wen Qing can't look away. His jaw clenches, but his voice is steady when he speaks, his eyes dry. "Thank you," he says, "and I'm sorry." End of story. Thanks for listening.